All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to episode one of the Jesse and James Team Rocket podcast. I'm Jesse.
I'm James. How's it going?
Not too bad, James. How are you this wonderful, wonderful evening?
I just like got killed 10 times in a row trying to play Heroes of the Storm. Game's
Actually, I didn't know you actually. I was actually in the technical alpha for that game. I didn't know you were playing it.
I just started playing. I'm so bad at it. It's funny.
Who do you like playing in it?
Rainer.
I like being Nova.
Yeah, I can see that.
See, now we need to play it together. Run around as Nova and Rainer.
That's too weird, bruh.
You know,
That's
I'm all right. That's the perfect StarCraft team. What the fuck are you hating for? Oh,
not.
foul language. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, this podcast does unfortunately utilize explicit language and content. Ergo, if you are under the age of 17, this may not be an appropriate podcast for you. We do recommend that you seek your parents' permission before listening to this podcast.
Yeah, Justin can say some really inappropriate stuff.
Oh, that is right. I'm going to say lots of inappropriate things. My favorite inappropriate things are actually monosyllabic four-letter words that can be utilized in various means.
Right, so what do you say we get the show on the road, buddy?
Yes. For our first podcast, our very first one, we're actually going to run down our top 10 games of our lifetimes that we have played and why we like them and what we think they did for their genres.
Yeah, that's gonna be kind of weird for mine because most of them are just like comfort things. But actually, I did something blasphemous that a lot of fans of a certain series are really gonna hate of a couple of
Well, we will definitely see how this goes. What tell you what,
them.
James, why don't you start with your number 10?
Right, number 10. Out of all the games that this company has made this character the mascot for, I think I picked one of the titular ones, probably the one that everybody's played, Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
That is actually a good one.
Yeah, like I've really fought with this. Like I went back and I played the Mega Collection and stuff to see which one was actually my favorite.
Yeah.
And I was like, technically, Sonic 3 slash Sonic and Knuckles is hands down the best, but like Sonic 2, there's just something about it. Like the colors seem more vivid, and even though Sonic is more square, like they're trying to go a different design way, it just seems way brighter and way faster and even more fun because like the constriction of the levels and like the resolution is smaller too. It seems like those branching pathways you have mean more in Sonic 2 than any of the other ones.
I mean, if you also think about it, when you look at Sonic 3 slash Sonic and Knuckles, I mean, they were pushing the limits of what the Genesis was capable of at that time. But if you really want to look at it, you have to look at each sequential jump in the series and what each one brought to it. And I feel like, honestly, I would have to agree. I would feel like Sonic 2 definitely brought a lot to the table. Like everything that Sonic 1 did, Sonic 2 stepped up significantly. More vivid levels, more creative levels. Oh God, the music was amazing. I mean, I think that was one of the. I'm a big sucker for soundtracks, personally, and I think Sonic 2 had a wonderful one. I think the tunes in Sonic 2 were much more memorable. I mean, I grant you, I don't think Emerald Hill is nearly the definitive track that, say, Green Hill Zone was. But I would say, let's see, you have Chemical Plant, you have Casino Night Zone,
I actually think
Hilltop,
Oil Ocean is one of
Oil
the.
Top, Ill Ocean, Oil Ocean, or the.
And Mystic Cave, that was pretty good
Oh,
too.
Mystic Cave multiplayer. The two player
Oh.
version of Mystic Cave is hands down one of the best tracks in the franchise.
Yeah, Sonic 3 is up there mainly just because the soundtrack to me is better. But Sonic 2, actually, they're about the same. You're right. The soundtracks are pretty dead on. But it's just like you said, something about even like the color juxtaposition. If you look at like Oil or Chemical Plant, like the main stage is like this dull gray with blue and gold. Then when you get
And
to
I
the
mean,
aquatic parts, bright pink, and the enemies are like bright yellow and
on,
red.
I mean, if you want to talk about branching pathways, Chemical Plant Zone, good Lord, depending just at the, I think, the very beginning of Act Two, depending on whether or not you take the top pathway or the bottom pathway at the very beginning when you have like the ramps, will take you onto a different part of the level all the way through the end.
Yeah, that's just a really hard thing to do, especially when they're younger and they're trying to like figure out how to get on that weird part where they do like the double helixes so you can go to the
Oh yeah.
next part. Oh my God, they used to drive me nuts when I was little.
Yeah.
They used to drive
Nah,
me insane.
I would have to agree with Sonic 2. You know, we should have really thought up honorable mentions because there are quite a few that I have. Well, you know what? Tell you what. After our number two picks, we'll go into our honorable mentions for games that should have made the list. But
Man,
moving.
that's going to be pretty much every game on the Sonic series for me besides two.
I've got a few that I could name. Definitely a few fighting games. However,
yeah,
my personal number 10, this is a franchise that I feel like outside of this foray into the series, I feel like was kind of largely shunted stateside. I'm talking about the Front Mission series, and specifically Front Mission 3 for PlayStation 1. This was Square's, I think, their next big foray into tactical gaming after Final Fantasy Tactics. This one actually took place in the couple hundred years, I think 100 or so years into the future, where, you know, you piloted big robot tanks around. I mean, these were giant monolithic mechs that, you know, not like your Japanese anime mecha where it's like a really sleek design. I mean, these are like walking tanks called Wanzers. And the plot line for Front Mission 3 dealt a lot in political intrigue, backstabbing, and you're basically trying to stop terrorists from utilizing this giant bomb called Midas. And it was a very big deal. And I mean, and for that matter, each game in the series takes place along a corresponding storyline. So games similar to that, such as Seokoden, which we'll get into later, you know, Front Mission has a continuing storyline as opposed to, say, Final Fantasy, which each game is different from the next most of the time.
Yeah.
I really feel like the Front Mission 3 definitely pushed some of the limits to their tactical RPG gaming. Not to mention, I think the graphics in the game were phenomenal for its time.
I can see that being, like, one of your favorites, especially because, like, again, around that time, too, like, that's when mecha anime was huge.
Oh, yeah.
Huge. So I can see Square, like, putting their own spin on it around that time, and, like, it actually does look like it's a really fun game, but I never had a chance to play them.
Anyway, it's on PSN right now. If you have a chance to play it, listeners, I would recommend it. I think there have been other Front Mission games that have made it stateside. I know Front Mission 4 did on the PlayStation 2. Front Mission Evolved, which was more of an action shooter. A really poor man's Armored Core, in my opinion, unfortunately. It ended up on PS3 and Xbox 360. I know the GBA got a port of Front Mission 1, which plays okay. It's good, but not great. It definitely shows its age. I feel like Front Mission 3 is definitely the definitive Front Mission, although, again, you have limited picking stateside. James, you're number 9.
This is going to piss you off. Not really piss you off because it's one of my favorites, but Resident Evil 3.
That doesn't so much piss me off. I feel – well, I'll let you get into it. This is your favorite game, not mine. I'll get into it.
So, fun fact, Resident Evil 3 was originally a side story game. Resident Evil Code Veronica was the original Resident Evil 3, but due to copyright and licensing, Sony had the rights to all the numbered sequels, so they had to completely redo parts of Resident Evil 3 to make it actual true third game and canon. But besides that, Resident Evil 3 is like my number 9 on the list. For reasons that I think should be open to interpretation, but for me, it's just the fact that there's actually a literal monster in Nemesis that can pop up whenever the game decides to, based off of the amount of time you spend in a certain area. There's a lot of cool customization, like you can make hand-loaded ammunition that functions better. There's a bunch of different branching, different things you can do. Items appear in different areas. Things are harder to kill. To me, it's like the best out of all of them until they decided to become a full-on action game. Because there still is a lot of weird science in these, too. That's why I like it a lot. And also, it makes for some really, really hilarious overdubs that you can do with Nemesis and Jill Valentine and Carlos Oliveira.
Jill, aren't you the master of lockpicking?
I mean, for real, like, that game is so cheesy, like, in the series. But, again, just because of the amount of stuff you can do, I wish the controls were better so you could actually play it and enjoy it. Because that one is hands down the best. It makes Jill like a complete badass. It makes the game series, like, hands down, up until 4, that was the best one. Like, no questions asked. The graphics were pretty much at the limit that the PlayStation can handle, and it had you could have a lot of zombies on the screen, which is weird, because, like, at the most beforehand, you maybe had 3, 4, and at one point in Resident Evil 3, there's, like, 7.
Oh, wow.
It's retarded. Plus Nemesis, which is really cool, because Nemesis will actually, like, hit zombies and, like, explode. He'll just, like, one-shot them. And he has a rocket launcher. What's not to like about that? And I guess it's also what made my list, because it's the only one that I really got to play. Because, like, 2 and the original, because of the way my mom is, when I was younger, I wasn't allowed to play them. I actually bought that, and she bought me the strategy guide for Christmas. But yeah,
And I mean
it's...
the, and I would imagine like the problem is like because of that when Resident Evil 3 is your initial foray into that genre, that is going to be what you judge everything else by.
I mean, yeah. When they
If
went...
you,
My bad, go ahead.
I would say that if you haven't played the previous ones up until that point, especially if you play them, say, right now, that's a franchise that I would say that its earlier installments did not age as well. I think the control scheme was very. I think it worked for what it was at the time,
I
but
mean,
I feel like that control scheme now would be such a hindrance.
yeah,
I
but yeah,
hate
definitely.
that tank control scheme is terrible.
I mean, you think that's bad? Silent Hill, the first one.
Oh my God, I remember Silent Hill, the first
Because,
one.
yeah, the slide issues where your character, like, hair would stop and slide a little bit. But then you have to remember those games are also designed before 3D controls were a reality, too. That's the other thing I was getting into is the fact that 3 had an active dodge mechanic and a 360 spin, and it took away that, like, you had to press X to go up and down stairs. There's all kinds of stuff that I had that made me mad that when I played Code Veronica, all that crap was back. Another fun fact, they were designed by two entirely different design and, like, writing teams, which is really weird.
Yeah.
All right, now it's your turn, kind sir.
My number 9. All right, this is actually the only sports game that's going to make the list, and it's a sport that's had a recent birth in our modern society as we know it. I'm a mixed martial arts fan, which means I am a big UFC fan.
For some reason, I thought you were going to go with, like, winning 11-7. It's like, what?
Oh yeah, soccer, let me tell. Football, goal.
Football.
I bring this list up only because the most recent UFC, EA's recent foray into MMA really pissed me off, and I do not feel that EA has a very good pulse on how an MMA game should be played. So my number 9 is going to THQ's, the defunct studio, THQ, their installment of UFC Undisputed 3. This game, in my opinion, if you are a mixed martial arts fan, this is by far the definitive mixed martial arts experience. This is the game you want to play. It has everything. It actually has a really robust career mode that I thought was very good. The creative fighter mode was top notch. You had a lot of actual clothing companies that were around at the time of the installment. Great move sets, diverse fighter list, and actually, one of the best parts of the game, in my opinion, was the addition of the Pride mode. Fun fact, there was a Pride was a for the record, for those of you who don't know this, Pride was a mixed martial arts organization based out in Japan that in the early 2000s rivaled the UFC in popularity. What ultimately did Pride in was the fact that UFC had a better foothold on the American market, and that's Pride attempted to make an expansion over here, and it did not fare well as they waited about a year too late. At one point, Pride arguably had the best heavyweight roster bar none, and the best light heavyweight roster bar none. Which, mind you, for those of you that don't know, the light heavyweight division was the UFC's flagship division, and the UFC at that time also had a very notoriously weak heavyweight division. Nonetheless, the addition of the Pride mode I thought was really good. You fought in a Pride ring. The old Pride rule set was put into play. It was just a really clean game experience. It was fluid. It moved quickly. Everything felt crisp, precise. It was a fun game to play. And I actually thought it was really cool because THQ, at the time when the UFC was starting to release MMA games on the PS2, THQ actually had the license for the Pride game. And the Pride game was actually, funny enough, not that bad. It had its own creative fighter mode, a much more robust one than the UFC games at that time. If the only thing that really hinders Undisputed 3 is the fact that because it is an older game, it doesn't have an up-to-date roster, which means you don't have fighters that are currently around now and are current champions, or you get the unfortunate thing where if you play a game from several years past, the rosters just aren't up to date, which means their stats aren't up to date. You don't have fighters as they currently are, which, if you're a bit into nostalgia, that could be a good thing. But nonetheless, for a pure MMA fighting game experience, in terms of both fun and what it should feel like, I feel Undisputed 3 was the best by far, and I would actually recommend it over UFC or over the current UFC game that has come out via Electronic Arts. EA, for those of you that don't know, released their own MMA game called EA MMA on the PS3 and Xbox, and it just played abysmally. It was made by the Fight Night team, but it was, unlike the Fight Night boxing games, which are really, really good and really well developed, this one was not. Everything in EA MMA just felt really sluggish, unresponsive, just, it was lacking and it just wasn't there. And I feel like the UFC MMA game, or the EA UFC games, inherited a lot of that. The game's pretty, but I mean, you expect that from an EA game, but everything feels slower, it feels sluggish, unresponsive. The grappling engine isn't as good. The submission system that they utilized for EA UFC was just terrible. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a 360 or a PlayStation 3 and you are into MMA games, I would recommend just don't even bother with EA UFC. Go a generation back. Get Undisputed 3. You will not be disappointed by that. Unless you don't like MMA games, in which case, why are you playing them anyway? Anyway, James, your number 8.
Number 8 is The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past. Like, I was trying really hard not to have the same or games from the same series on this list, but that's like impossible. Completely impossible, because this one is different. Because it's the last of the generation of the consoles of the Super NES era. So it's still a 3/4 isometric, like everybody's used to. So the classic Zelda that you want to bring up, like, I know it's a lot of people's favorites besides Ocarina of Time, but we'll get into that way later. Did you ever play Link to the Past?
You know, I'm going to catch hell for this. I did not actually. I had a Super Nintendo, but the only three games I ever owned for it were Super Mario World, Street Fighter 2, and Donkey Kong Country. I was mostly a Sega kid.
Me too. Like, I got mine way at the end of the console cycle. Like, literally the next thing I got, like, next year for Christmas was the PlayStation. So, anyway, this is my favorite because, like, I had to stay home from school for a while because of Bell's palsy. Messed up my face. So, I couldn't really go to school with a facial paralysis issue. So, yeah. Link to the Past. Every day, I got every heart piece, all four bottles. I got, like, all the magic potions. I got the magic reduction. To me, like, it's another instance of just, like, the difference between the processing power in a Super Nintendo and a Sega. Like, the games are beautiful for two different reasons. Like, this color saturation in just Link to the Past is amazing for a 16-bit game. Especially, like, one towards the beginning. That one came out in 91, so that was, like, towards the beginning of its life cycle, and it still held up all the way to like 1996-97 when the PlayStation was coming out. The adventure, actually, most Zeldas are, if you know what you're doing, it's pretty quick, or you could like take your time and again do all the side questing and stuff. And that's always the reason why it's been one of my favorite games. In fact, I wanted to play mine the other day, but I realized I hadn't beaten Link Between Worlds yet. I have to beat that before I can go back and play the original version of it. And it's just, on a whole, it just was a lot of fun to play. Like, it was something brand new to me, because there weren't that many, like, open-ended games back then. It was, everything was completely linear, like all the side-scroller games, or Mega Man was all we really had then. Or Star Fox. Oh, I love Star Fox. But anyway, Link to the Past is quite possibly my favorite, or it's tied for number 2 out of my favorites of that series.
All right. Admittedly, I would talk more about Zelda, but, like, that was a franchise that I just... You know what? I didn't get into it, so I'm really not qualified to speak on, unfortunately.
What about Final Fantasy? That one's a good one.
Yeah, I can talk about Final Fantasy all day, and we'll get into that later, won't we?
Yeah, okay, so now it's on to you, sir.
But if we're going to talk about well-respected RPG franchises, this is one... My number 8 is a game in a series that I feel is finally getting its due. This is for the PlayStation 2, Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne.
Let me stop right there. I'm going to let you finish, but Devil Summoner is a way better game.
You can go fuck yourself. You, sir. Well, you know what? Actually, here's the thing. There might be people that would agree with that.
Yeah.
The reason I'm going to list Nocturne... Nocturne was, if for those who are listening, it was the it's the third game in the main Shin Megami Tensei series. Shin Megami Tensei is an RPG franchise that has been around, I think, since the Nintendo era, that has had a much more, I would say, mature plot than your typical RPG fare. It actually deals a lot with demons and mythos, and a lot of times it also deal it, you know it deals with harsh extremes of alignments of law and chaos and how those shape the world around it. Nocturne in this case was a very unique take because rather than utilizing the standard law chaos system that the Shin Megami Tensei franchise was known for, it actually had reasons, and they were basically philosophies, ideologies that you could get behind, or you didn't have to get behind any of them, which would lead to a different set of endings entirely. This particular game, it was I think it used a cel-shaded graphics engine. It was actually really good. It is had again an amazing soundtrack, and I am a sucker for a good soundtrack.
Yeah, you are.
I am. It's
Wait,
all
wait.
it was also notoriously difficult, and it was a very unforgiving game.
Pause. Pause. Is this the one where the cell phone incident happened?
Yes, this was this. Nocturne gets a special place in my heart because it is one of the few games, I would say one of three video games, that has made me throw something at a wall. It made my nerd rage manifest. This game is particularly merciless when it can exploit you and take advantage of your party being in the worst conceivable position at the worst conceivable time. Nocturne has no problem taking advantage of that and reaming you for it. It is a very unforgiving game, but I would have to say that it is very rewarding. Beating that game was well worth the experience. And I would
You'd break
provide
another cell phone for it,
I don't know if I would do that, but I will say this, provided you have the patience to play it and you're willing to learn how the game plays out, it's definitely worth playing. It's actually, if you like the Pokemon monster breeding genre, Nocturne's not too far off from that. Nocturne actually has its own demon gathering and combining demons together to create a super demon from it. I would definitely recommend playing it. It's a phenomenal gaming experience.
That's funny. That's really funny.
I believe this is your number seven.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's funny because that was like a perfect segue into what I was about to say is on my list and it's gonna be like considered blasphemy too. Pokemon X and Y, aka the sixth generation.
Oh,
Gen 6.
I like how we went from like the dark side of, monster demon gathering games
To
to,
the kiddie side.
yeah, the kiddie pool side, but albeit, I feel like that's actually really disrespectful to the Pokemon franchise as a whole. That's really not fair to call it the kiddie pool franchise.
Oh my God, Pokemon is like one of the darkest, creepiest things. Like, have you ever read some of the Pokédexes that some of them
Oh
have?
yeah,
Oh
Cubone,
my God,
Cubone, Cubone.
that's sad. What about Hypno? He likes to lure little kids away into the woods and eat their dreams because their dreams taste better.
God. Well, they're
Kadabra,
probably
huh?
pure. They're probably more pure, more innocent. Oh God.
That's even worse.
So basically what we're realizing is Hypno is a pedophile.
Hypno's a pedophile. Abracadabra were kids with psychic abilities that fell asleep and woke up as Pokemon. What the fuck? What is that? How does that even work? Are human and Pokemon transgenic in that universe that they just swap back and forth and nobody's bats an eye at it? Like, could you imagine that if you went to sleep and woke up as like a monster with powers and everybody's like, "Oh, Jesse, you're something new. Let's call you Abra," and they just like left you alone. You were
You
the
know what?
first
You
time.
know what?
God.
You know what? That's really not too different from my real life. I sleep all day anyway.
Oh, you're right.
So tell me though, because this is a well-established franchise, why X and Y?
A lot of players that are veterans, quote unquote, I guess veterans works, have been playing the series since they were brand new, so people our age did not like the main story of this game because of how short it is. The main story literally takes you maybe 17 hours to beat. That said, after beating the main game, if you're into competitive anything, oh my God, there are infinite things you can do in that game with competitive battling. Like, I logged over 246 hours in that game before I started playing it, from trading and breeding Pokemon to get like perfect IVs and stuff like that. But that's like a whole other side. But like, first and foremost, it's the first truly 3D Pokemon game we've had. That said, a lot of the visuals are cool, and it did a lot of cool things by adding Digimon in there, which everybody joked about, because there's a fourth stage for some Pokemon, or just a second evolutionary stage called Mega Evolution, which works like it did in Digimon or in Dragon Ball Z. They go one form up, and their stats go through the roof, and they did something they should have did from the beginning, and I'm happy. You know what they did, Jesse?
What's that?
They made Charizard a dragon in his Mega form. After his inception of being this weird European dragon that for some reason wasn't a dragon, they finally made him a dragon. You know what the even better part about it is?
What's that?
Mega Charizard X is black and blue. He looks dope.
No, he's white and gold.
I should have thought about that the other day. Put that up. Is his Charizard black and blue or white and gold? Like, for everything about
it. Oh, God.
Oh, and the soundtrack.
I deserve to get punched in the balls for that. I really do. I'm so sorry, everybody.
And the
I am the worst.
You have to listen to the soundtrack because it literally sounds like if Nintendo and the Pokemon Company decided to finally make their own, like, Final Fantasy. It literally sounds like Final Fantasy VI or Final Fantasy VII.
That's a bold claim.
I swear. Like, I'm not even being a bold jerk. Like, if you listen to some of the songs, like Anastasia City, oh my god, I listen to that shit on loop. And the Pokemon battle themes are really cool. Like, a lot of the stuff got remade, obviously, because it had to be in full 3D battle movement-wise. And then overall, it's a really pretty game. Even though it could look cooler, but I think it's where the game should stop graphic-wise. And again, it introduced a lot of cool stuff. It introduced a lot of things that made people mad and rubbed the wrong way. Not as bad as Vanillux, though. I still don't get the hate Vanillux gets. I guess that's the line is ice cream cones, right?
I guess so.
Ice cream cones can't be Pokemans, but trash can be Pokemon for some reason. And sewage can be Pokemon. Nobody bats an eye. But ice cream cone, people lose their shit.
It's too far. It's gone.
Too far. Too far. Too far. But yeah, mainly for me, it's the battle. The competitive battling made the game amazing. You could battle any of your friends. You could battle random people around the world. And it's just a lot more fun than I thought the game would end up being, to be totally honest. It blew Generation 5 out of the water, and that was my favorite up until then.
Oh, Pokemans.
Pokemans. Man, 1997 was so long ago. Yeah, but it's on to you, kind sir. Let's see what you got.
My number 7, if we're going to talk about franchises that had, again, great music, but I feel like this is an RPG that had a phenomenal battle system. By far, in my opinion, the best battle system to ever be in an RPG. SquareSoft, now Square Enix, their 1998, I would actually call this an unheralded epic, Xenogears.
Yeah.
Xenogears had a very heavy anime influence. It wouldn't shock me if that was listed, if one of that game's influences were Neon Genesis Evangelion. It had a lot of religious iconography. It had a plot that I think you would need a bachelor's in Jungian psychology to understand. I mean, it was an out there game, but I think it played relatively well. It had a few minor platforming moments in it.
Yeah.
Truthfully, the plot is a convoluted mess, and part of it was because I think they ran out of fun or ran their budget over. So much like Evangelion, they had to cut it in such a way. This game's true strong points, two of them would be A, the soundtrack, which was composed by Yasunori Mitsuda, the gentleman behind Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross, which means you know that soundtrack's going to be gold.
Yeah.
And the battle system, which in a lot of ways, it's unlike anything I've ever played. In fact, actually, the next two games that I think have a battle system resembling Xenogears would be Legend of Legaia for PlayStation 1 as well, and Chrono Cross. Those all, in my opinion, have very similar battle systems to Xenogears, but I feel like Xenogears did it the best. Xenogears was really clean, really fluid. It was just pretty. It was... I can't say enough. Like, I... There's very little that I can say to do it justice. I would suggest that if you're looking for a unique RPG experience, and mecha, you know what? And that's actually the other thing. The battles, it was also a very mecha heavy RPG, and unlike Front Mission 3, which was listed above, which you had tank-like mechas, this one is decidedly more in the traditional realm of Japanese anime mechas with sleek body designs. You know, and when you went into combat with those, they utilized the same battle system as your human form. So you would have these big robots just pulling off attack combos. It was just,
Man.
again, a wonderful game, and I think it was a very polarizing game. There were some reviewers that did not like it and really just took a dump all over the game. I think they got it wrong. I think Xenogears was, I you know what, actually, this is might be the best way to describe it. I think it was ahead of its time.
Probably things are.
I really feel that, you know, had it come out now, I think it would have been a much more accepted game. As it stands right now, I actually think they could have done so much more with it had it come out now, especially with some of the systems we have now. I mean, you could put a remake of that game on the Vita, and I think it would do phenomenally.
Why isn't it on the PSN? That's kind of
It
weird.
is. It actually is. If you want to, again, if you want to pick up Xenogears, it is on the PSN. If you can find a PS1 copy, feel free. I don't know how much it's going for or how rare it is, but it's definitely worth having.
Probably at least $80.
Yep. All right, Mr. James, you're number six.
Oddly enough, you mentioned like religious iconography because this game that I'm gonna mention is horrifying, and it took me all over a year to beat because I played in little chunks. Because it was really creepy because it doesn't have music, it has weird sounds that take
Yes.
the place of soundtracks. Silent Hill 2. Dear God.
Oh,
Silent
that
Hill
game.
2, Restless Dreams is probably the worst pick I could have made for the first game I had for my PlayStation 2, besides Capcom versus SNK 2, because it literally is like that one is such a mind fuck. From the beginning all the way to the end, you're constantly just like, what? What is this? Why is he here? And this slowly gives you little hints of like the overall story of why James Sunderland is in Silent Hill and why his dead wife wrote him that letter and why he's so convinced that he has to go back. Like, have you ever actually read the story of that, or have I explained it well enough to this point?
I think you've explained it enough to me purpose or personally if you want to explain it to the viewers or to the
Okay, so
listeners.
Silent Hill's overarching theme is man versus reality, and then like the reality of like sin and punishment, basically. James Sunderland murders his wife, and he gets this magical letter that takes him back to Silent Hill. And if a little backstory on Silent Hill is, Silent Hill is like this weird, like Twilight Zone portal into the judgment ring of hell, where basically only things that are being judged go or get brought by their past. And everything goes to shit for James. And it's really weird because, like, when you're there, you meet Laura. And you meet another incarnation of his wife. So you meet her as a daughter or as a young girl, and you meet her as the woman that she could have been had she not got sick. Like you meet, just making me mad that I forgot her name, but you meet her. She's really outgoing. She's also for some reason a stripper. A strip club in Silent Hill, which I always thought was kind of odd. But basically, you meet her, and then through doing all this, you kind of reconcile and come to terms with the fact that you murdered your wife. She didn't die in that hospital. You killed her. She wants you to kill her, but then last minute she decides she wants to play out life and see how it works, but you're just so grief-stricken and angry at the fact that you think that she ruined your life by becoming sick, and she drug you down with her that you asphyxiate her. To the point that the final boss is your wife, and there's four endings, one of which involves James committing suicide because he can't deal with the fact that he killed his wife and he just blocked it out of his mind and made it look like she died on her own.
I mean,
Mind.
in all fairness, if I had killed my wife, I'd probably feel the same way. If, you know, I had a what.
If you had a wife. But yeah, like the game overall, like again, the sound design, like if you've heard anything of Silent Hill, seen anybody watch, like play it through like a Let's Play or anything on Twitch or on YouTube, there is no actual soundtrack to that game. It's just these really distorted sounds and like ambient sounds that kind of come together that make almost songs. And like just there's a lot of discord in the notes, so it makes you feel uneasy the entire time. And it has a creepy camera angle, like over the shoulder and like right in front of you, so you can never see too far away. And the monster designs are just like unnerving because you have like two legs flipped on top of each other, and there's that scene where like Pyramid Head is like raping them, and it's like, what is this? What did I put in this PlayStation?
Oh my god!
I will never sleep again.
Nope. Never sleeps.
Okay, so with that, it's on. I think I need to go like take a hot shower and pray before I go to sleep.
Yeah, really. All right, I realized I had just talked about Nocturne about 2 games ago.
Yeah.
Nocturne, despite how good of a game it is, and I would actually argue, is superior to at least what I'm about to mention. It was not the game that got me into Shin Megami Tensei. Unfortunately, every game series I think has that gets like mainstream popularity among the gaming populace, there's always that one that doesn't. For the Final Fantasy franchise, if 6 is what I would call the 16-bit golden age, where a lot of the diehard fans are in love with 6, 7 was the one that brought it to the mainstream.
Yeah.
In this case, with regards to the Shin Megami Tensei franchise, I'm referring to the Persona franchise mainly. This is a dual inclusion, Persona 3 and Persona 4. Hmm. This, first off, having played Persona 1 and Persona 2, those two are radically different games. They're more of a dungeon crawler experience, and they have unique game mechanics, but they're not. At that time, the Shin Megami Tensei franchise, it was a cult following here stateside. Persona 3 and 4 changed that. 3 specifically. Three, for one, drew a very heavy anime influence in its approach. It actually, here's what got me to play 3. I was watching a friend of mine play it, and it looked like your standard fare dungeon crawler style RPG. What actually sold me on the game was the dubbing of the game. The English dubbing and localization was one of the best dub jobs I have ever seen in a Japanese RPG, bar none. The choice of voice actors used, the delivery, everything. It was just a very, it was crisp. I mean, I it was well done. It was, I would say, perfect. Xenogears, as previously mentioned, while heavily anime influenced, had the worst dub job of all time. Like, we are talking words coming out of people's mouths while their mouths are closed. It was just, it was like every dub rule was broken with Xenogears. Not the case with Persona 3. Persona 3 is pretty much voice acted throughout most of the game, and all the voice acting is perfect. The game mechanics, similar to Nocturne, but much more, a little bit more forgiving. You don't recruit demons in the traditional sense. Rather, you get tarot cards, which you equip, which allow you to use the powers of said demons, which in this case are actually referred to as personas. They're aspects of your personality and mind, and your main character has the unusual gift of being able to use many different personas at once. 3 and 4, also, again, because I'm a soundtrack whore, have phenomenal soundtracks. And very distinctively different soundtracks, I might add. 3 in particular has like a very jazzy, urban feel to it, which is appropriate because the game takes place in a rather large city. 4, however, has a very poppy feel to it, but takes place in a more rural Japanese town.
That's what that game confuses me.
Yeah.
It's almost like a weird juxtaposition. Like, oh, listen to this poppy music while you're catching demons and running around doing
weird. Well, I mean, what I would even tell you with this, they both are very dungeon crawler heavy, but each one has their own specific approach. Persona 3, for example, in what I can only consider to be the most truthful, this was, you couldn't have picked a better location for this. The point of the game is you assail a 200 some odd floor dungeon called Tartarus, all the way to the top for the final showdown. Tartarus manifests itself in your high school.
Oh, the irony, because you know what Tartarus is, right?
I think I know, but feel free to refresh me.
Hell. Tartarus. Perdition. It's hell. High school is hell. I think it's kind of funny.
Truly. Truly. Persona 3 got it right. Persona 4, on the other hand, has individual story-based dungeons that are about anywhere between about 10 floors a dungeon, but the dungeons themselves are crafted based on the personality of the person that is influencing them. One of the most memorable dungeons in Persona 4, it takes place in a game. It's called like Fantasy Quest or something, and it's reminiscent of an 8-bit RPG game, which culminates, especially if you're playing the PS Vita version, Persona 4 Golden, which I would strongly recommend. That game is actually worth getting a Vita for alone. When you get to the final or to the boss of that particular dungeon, the boss music is normally this really uber poppy J-pop sounding boss battle theme. When you get to the boss, it converts to an 8-bit version of itself.
Really? So it's kind of like a... that's pretty cool.
It was like a really nice Easter egg that they threw in, and it was really cool, and it just added to it. I realize that these are two very separate games, but they're very similar in feel to each other. It utilizes a very similar engine, same game mechanics. I can't... if I were to compare each version's latest one against the other, Persona 3 Fez against Persona 4 Golden, I would have to say 4 Golden is the superior game, but I would definitely not dissuade someone from playing Persona 3 Fez. Each game has its stronger, has points about it that make it stronger than the other. 3, I think, actually has a better soundtrack than 4, and I might catch some hell from people for that. I also think that 3 has a stronger supporting cast. That being said, 4 has a more relatable story, in, at least in terms of the role that you take. It has a much stronger main cast, and the battle system is a lot more cleaned up. So,
I'm gonna have to play that then. You still have it?
Actually, yeah. I still have 3 and 4. Yeah, hell, if you want to play Persona 3 Fez, you can download it off the PSN network. It can be purchased maybe like $10 or something. Persona 4 Golden, if you have a Vita, that's going to be the definitive version of it that you want. With that said, James, you're number 5.
Okay, so at number 5, I have to ask you this. Do you have, if this shows up on your list, you just have
I was going to say, are you about to ask me, do I like horny bunnies?
No. Everybody does.
Obviously, everybody likes horny bunnies. Go on.
If this game appears on your list, just skip it. Or actually, if I start talking about it, just feel free to jump in. Can you guess what it is?
Well, you haven't given me any hints, so...
How can I put it? It has come out with... It took, let's say, 10 years to make a sequel of the main canon series. And within the past 5 years, they made 3 updates to it.
Are we talking Street Fighter 4?
Street Fighter 2 is actually on this list.
There is actually a Street Fighter game on my list. Not
Street Fighter 2.
It's not Street Fighter 2.
Oh my god. I mean, where do you start with Street Fighter 2?
It more or less jump started its entire genre.
Oh my god. I mean, like, I didn't even know which one to pick. It's like Street Fighter 2 Turbo is pretty good, but so is Championship Edition, and then it was like, I'll just say just Street Fighter 2, and it encompasses all of Street Fighter 2. Because again, you're right, it kickstarted the entire fighting game.
Do you remember the commercial for that? For the Super Nintendo when they first... Like, that was one of the launch titles for the Super Nintendo, and I have to say, that was one of the best launch titles. For those of you who have never understood just how much influence Street Fighter had on our culture, Hadouken is a mainstay among 90s gamers. Everyone knows what it is. Spinning Bird Kick is another one.
Yeah, there's t-shirts of it. I've seen kids wear the Downright Fear shirt and not get what it means. Like, what does that mean? Why do you have the shirt on? Get out, literally, is what I want to say. Every time I see a kid, or, like, give me the shirt, you don't deserve to wear it if you don't know what it is.
It's like, call me a Shoryuken because I'm downright fierce. I mean like, to
say about that game.
To understand that game and what it did, you would need to dedicate an entire episode to that. I really...
Because there's so much weird shit to go over, like, what makes what character... We need to do that as an episode, just fighting games, the whole thing of fighting games.
You know what? Seeing as I am going to Evo in July, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's so much you could say about that because it literally got me into competitive gaming in general. Because, like, I think before then there was no such thing as competitive gaming before that game came out. Because I remember, like, I used to go to the arcade once a week, and I would literally, I was like, what? We were 91, we were, like, what, 6 and 7, respectively? Or 5 and 6? Something like that. And I used to play it, and like my brother used to fuss at me because like there'd be like kids his age playing and you'd be messing with them, but I would actually play and I actually know how to do some of the move inputs, and they would just laugh because I actually could win a round or two against them. And then when they came out on the Sega Genesis, because I had the Sega version, oh my God, I played the game until like my eyes bled. I played it all the time, all the time. It's hands down. This actually should have been my number one game, actually. I regret having the other game down there as number one, but it's one of the most influential games of all time and in my personal life as being a gamer, I guess, just because it's been around forever and I've played it since I was like 6.
I mean, that's, yeah, that about the same for me.
Yeah.
I
So easy
guess.
to get into, even on a scrub level. It's like, oh,
Oh.
so what do I do? You do quarter circle. If you, no matter, almost no matter what character you pick, if you do quarter circle and then like a punch or a kick, you'll do something.
You might get something out of it.
Get
Yeah,
something out.
at least half the roster, you'll get something.
Yeah, you can't really go wrong with it. It's a good entry level game, or it's a really grueling, brain shattering, soul
It's one of
game.
those games that's surprisingly simple to learn, but when you look at it from the competitive standpoint, it is an incredibly difficult game to master. However, we have enough time to go into this later. I
Yeah,
suppose I
so.
should get into my number five. This is a huge genre jump going from fighters to 4X, the spiritual successor to Civilization 2, and what a lot of people say is quite possibly Sid Meier's finest 4X work, Alpha Centauri, on the PC. This is also my first PC game on the list, and sadly the only one, so feel
I don't
free.
have any.
Yeah, well, PC Master Race, feel free to bitch slap me at a later date for this one. To tell you the story, by the way, how I got introduced to Alpha Centauri is to go back. My dad and I were in a Target, and I had some cash, and we went searching for video games on the PC because we had a new PC with a fancy new video card in the whole nine yards. And we picked out three games. One was Diablo 2, which is clicky click. Nox,
Wow.
an isometric RPG that I regret not giving more time to. That was a game I should have explored more of. And Alpha Centauri. Alpha Centauri is basic premise behind Alpha Centauri: the Earth is effed, and you pick one of seven factions that have left the Earth and have found a new planet to colonize that has Earth-like conditions. Well, as the game progresses, you find out that the planet is trying to kill you, as well as the other factions.
The
So
whole
you
planet.
so basically you can win by, aligning with all the factions together and becoming the supreme leader by crushing them with an iron military fist. You can actually win economically by basically cornering the global energy market and buying everyone out. Or there is the transcendence victory, where you actually evolve to another state of being in the human evolution. It's not a very graphics intensive game. You can actually pick it up off good old games or GOG.com for, I think, maybe like $5. But it is the one of the most de facto 4X experiences you will ever play. This is how good it was. Many years, at least a good 10 years later, when Civ 4 came out, someone made a Alpha Centauri total conversion mod for Civ 4. People still talk about what this game brought to the table, and its expansion only further added on Alien Crossfire. It's just a wonderful game. There's a, if you want to look on Steam, I want to say it's a game called Pandora that just recently came out that is probably the closest spiritual successor to Alpha Centauri that I've seen. But for the originality's sake, Alpha Centauri is phenomenal. If you like Civilization, you will love this game. There's no way around it. If you love Civilization, you have to play Alpha Centauri before you. If you ever decide you are done with the 4X genre and you just want to go out on a high note in the French or in that series of games in that, genre, Alpha Centauri is the way to go. That is the crowning achievement of that genre of gaming.
I don't even know what Forex is. I don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
Oh god, it's...
It sounds too confusing.
It's like explore, expand. I forget what the rest of the acronym
execute.
Is. So I would.
It shouldn't be
execute. I mean, you're not far off.
Probably not. It's exploit. That... The exploit.
No, actually, hold on. You know what? This is
no,
what Google. No. This is what Google is for.
Google is for like.
Here it is. Thank you, Wikipedia. This is what you exist for, right here. Yes, actually, it is explore, expand, exploit, and exterminate.
Ha ha! Ooh, you're right. That's crazy. Yeah, and this game that I'm about to mention has a little exploration and a lot of exploitation. A lot of exploitation.
This would be your number four. We actually, that was our top five. We're now hitting, as of now, this is number four.
So, everybody I know either hated, it's like one of the most polarizing games I've ever played. Either you loved it or you hated it. This, or a lot of people consider this the first step in the downfall into how can I put it? Casual games, especially in this series, but it's hands down my favorite. I played it so much that like
I can say Flappy Bird, we're not friends anymore.
It starts with an F, oddly enough. I played it so many times and I beat it so many times I could literally find every single item in the game blindfolded at this point.
What
and
game
it has
is
a
that?
Really cool monster catching side quest in it, and it just breaks the game from then on out. Final Fantasy X.
Oh, that
blasphemy, right?
No. I, you know what? I agree with you. I think Final Fantasy X is a good game. There are quite a few people that would agree that that was one of the starts of the downfall of the series. I disagree. I think X is a wonderful game in its own right. I think it was really well done. I think it's a better game than 12, but that's.
There's a lot of things that are a better game than 12. Not gonna lie. Yeah. But like, oh my god, 10, that, like I said, exploitation. How could you not exploit the hell out of the game? It was so easy and so much fun, but it takes so much time. Like, again, it's kind of like, again, it's Pokemon. It's this game, a lot of people are like, oh, this is when it got way too easy. And like, I'll ask, how long did it take you to beat it? It took like 94 hours. I beat the game in 50. What did you do? Like, it's literally, you can beat the game really quick, or you could take a lot of time and get everything, catch every monster, get every spell. The characters are more or less, like me and Jesse joke about a lot, they are just more or less rehashed archetypes from Final Fantasy VII, almost like identical to how like they parallel each other. But other than that, it was a really fun game. The music, for being what it was probably the best in the series, but it was also, at least at that time, was the best in the series. And it was the first one to have voice actors, so I guess... And the voice acting wasn't too, too terrible.
It gets joked on, but, I mean, it was...
Yeah.
You know what? That was one of the first console RPGs to bring in about voice acting.
Yeah, I mean, it was the first crack, so of course it's not going to be the best, or it's going to be the best and everything after that's just going to pale in comparison. But it did a good job pretty much with everything, except for the Meg Ryan face on Tidus. I still don't know what they're thinking to this day. I don't know why. It was like, we got to be androgynous because it's Japanese, so we got to make him look really feminine and whine all the time. All the time. That's like,
you know, everyone gets on him for being a whiner, but let's be fair, he's a 17-year-old teenager. If you're a 17-year-old teenager, transported into more or less a different era.
Yeah.
And you're not sure what's going... You know what? I'd be a little whiny, too. I feel like he gets a raw deal. I feel like in the list of Final Fantasy protagonists, Tidus got raw dealed.
Actually, you're right. I think if Cloud had a voice, he'd probably sound like Tidus. Because he was angsty, too, but it was a different kind of angst.
I want to say like, Cloud was like 19 or 20 years old, and
which you know what I mean. He was still like, man, this sucks. And then like Tidus is still like happy go lucky half the time, and he was like, damn, everybody I ever knew or loved is dead, all of them. And I can't say certain words, and we can't do certain things. But anyway, back to the actual gameplay mechanics, they're pretty cool. They were new. It had the monster hunting thing. It had the ability to completely synthesize items and the ability to get ultimate weapons again. But as I keep telling Jesse, and it breaks my heart, I found ways to make better weapons, only to find out that getting a couple of them are way easier than I thought. It was a complete waste of time and effort.
Hey, James.
Auroch reels. Auroch my ass. Reels.
Oh my God. You know, if we ever do a podcast on our finest nerd rage moments, tell you what, I'll tell the cell phone story with Shin Megami, but the Auroch reels story has to be told.
Oh my God, I felt so stupid. I was like, really? Really? But anyway, it's like, it actually is like my favorite. It replaced Final Fantasy IV. All those years ago, Final Fantasy IV is my favorite. And I really sat down and thought about it. X my favorite. It's easier to play, which is a downside and upside, but there's so much more crap to do in the long run. Right. Overall. And on to you, sir.
My number four, and a game back, you mentioned Street Fighter II.
Yeah.
And for those of you that are not aware of the storyline of Street Fighter as it currently sits, it is Street Fighter 1, then you have the Alpha franchise, then 2, then 4, and then 3. Which still makes it, oddly enough, a less disjointed franchise, or a less disjointed storyline franchise than a lot of games. However, the Alpha series in particular has three different iterations, Alpha 1, Alpha 2, and Alpha 3. And by the time Alpha 3 came along, there was something that I realized when I played Alpha 3, that all of the characters in Street Fighter 2 are in Alpha 3. And the storyline's really not much different between Alpha 3 and Street Fighter 2. That leads me to somehow think, even though I know that this, they've clarified the story that Alpha 3 happens and then Street Fighter 2 happens. However, for me, I have to say my number four spot does go to Street Fighter Alpha 3.
That's kind of funny.
Oh, it's a faster-paced fighting game than that of Street Fighter 2 Turbo. You have a lot more characters to work with. There's a lot of storyline expansion. Again, soundtrack horror in play here. You know, had a really, each stage was really exciting to listen to. And I would say, actually, to be entirely honest, in terms of fighting games of that era, between the PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 generation, the only series of games, in my opinion, that trump Alpha 3 soundtrack would be Capcom versus SNK2 and Street yep. Fighter 3, which those two games belong on any best of soundtrack list, however, be that as it may. Alpha 3 had a really, you know, it had a robust engine. You had control over what kind of fighting system you were working on, depending on, you know, what you were used to. It also had a world tour mode where you could pick any of the fighters in the game and build them up in an almost RPG-like fashion. And really build them in a way that you felt comfortable playing. If you wanted to make them, like, super hard-hitting, you could, but the flip to that was they would take damage very easily. You can make them high defense but low damage output. You know, you can make them a little faster. I mean, you had a lot of control over how your fighter played out.
Yeah.
It was, and I mean, again, you had pretty much, it had one of the largest rosters for a Street Fighter game at that time. I want to say about 20, almost 30 characters easily. And it utilized characters from other games. Like, for example, the Final Fight franchise. You had Guy, Cody, Sodom, Rolento from that series. You had all of the Street Fighter 2 cast. Between the original eight fighters, the bosses, and the new challengers. You had Akuma. You had a few new ones that had been introduced throughout the Alpha series. Sakura. You had a few references, actually, to the Street Fighter 1 games in Birdie. I mean, it was,
I'm just going to say that that game was actually legitimately like a redux of Street Fighter 2. They just didn't want to admit it. I don't care what anybody says.
I mean, you know what? If it was ever confessed that Street Fighter Alpha 3 is effectively Street Fighter 2, I'd be okay with that. I think that's how it should be. And I think that was as good of a storytelling as you're going to get for a Street Fighter game.
That's all you need. It's just people punching each other and throwing fireballs. Yeah. What else do you need to know?
Yeah.
Like, I still am confused to this day how Bison switches bodies. I don't get it at all.
You know what, I try not to think too hard on that. I don't feel like making myself mad. Or actually, like I said, you had definitely some Alpha-exclusive characters. You had, against Sakura, you had Rainbow Mika, Karen. Characters that are still in the franchise to this day. I mean, again, Sakura, again. Oh God, I would really have to sit here and think about this.
Yin and Yang, right?
Yin and Yang were
Or are they three?
they were three.
Okay.
Although I want to say with the PSP remake, they did bring in Yun, but that's
Best fan service.
yeah. I mean, again, what else is there to be said?
Still one of the best fighting games ever.
I think so. I know that it's not the most balanced, but for me, it was one of the most entertaining. It was actually there's a, every once in a while you get a game that brings you back to a genre and makes you really pay attention to it. I think for fighters, Alpha 3 was a big one for me. It was just.
Actually, I want to say my the biggest one for me, we'll get into this way later, still, even though it's not canon, it's just one of those weird things they decided to do is, in terms of fighting games, still Capcom versus SNK2. Because they had to completely rebalance the game because of the two opposing companies, the way they do stuff. Anyway, Alpha 3 is still hands down the best, in my opinion.
Although I would say, if again, and we'll get into honorable mentions later, but early on, if we're going to mention honorable mentions, special shout outs to Capcom versus SNK2 and Street Fighter 3, Third Strike. Those two in themselves are very clean fighting games, but and they really do deserve to be on a best of list. However, Mr. James, you're number three.
Okay, this game is another one of those things that either you love it or you hate it because it is nothing like the rest of the games that it's in the series of, but it's one of my favorites of all time. Super Mario World 4, Yoshi's Island. Or 5, Yoshi's Island.
Ooh.
Yoshi's Island. There's not enough I can say about that game. Not enough. I mean, seriously, did you play it?
I did not actually.
Blasphemer. Like, for real. What's wrong with you? Anyway, like, game.
My sister dropped pennies into my Super Nintendo, thus short-circuiting it.
Should have been flogged for that. Anyway, so Yoshi's Island. What is there that you can not say about Yoshi's Island? It's beautiful. It made the best use out of the extra graphics chip that they started throwing in later in the Super Nintendo games to allow for the scaling of characters and models. The color saturation is beautiful, but again, like, it was so different than any other Mario game because, for once, Yoshi is actually the main character. And your job is to deliver a baby Mario to his parents, which I can only guess are supposed to be Peach and Mario because they're babies and it takes place after Mario, which I'm still confused about because that game, you want to talk about convoluted timeline stuff that makes absolutely no sense. That one do. But anyway, like the mechanics that Yoshi uses where you eat an enemy, you poop out an egg, you throw the poop egg at something.
Oh Lord.
The 5, and there's like 3 different things you have to do. Might be 4, like to get the best score on the game because every level is scored individually, like how it always been, but not by like the weird goalposts. Like you have 5 flowers to get 8 red coins and 20 stars in every level to get the highest rating. And then he gets cool power-ups that Mario doesn't get, but they're all short-term, and they come in the form of watermelons, Jesse. Watermelons. The basic watermelon spit seeds. The red watermelon, you spit fire. The white or blue one, you spit ice. And it either freezes, sets things on fire, or just blows things up like a machine gun, because you spit seeds in the machine gun style. There's 4 types of eggs. Actually, yeah, 4. Green, yellow, red, flashing red. Green just defeats enemies, and if it bounces around a couple times, it changes color. Then if it hits an enemy again, you either get a coin or you'll get stars from it. Red is just red coins, or not red coins, just coins in general. And then the flashing red one is stars. And the whole game overall is just presented as really like happy adventure of a dinosaur carrying around a baby. And it's pretty dope. Like if you've never played it, I think you should. And I'm gonna go. This one's kind of dumb. Get it on the Wii Virtual Console, or if you're really, really a badass, fuck the police, download it as a ROM, and you'll be pleasantly surprised with it. It's really fun to play. Or if you can get your hands on it, you can get a used Super Nintendo for like $50. But the downside is Nintendo games, especially Super Nintendo games, are starting to go up in price, so that game itself is going to be like $50 to $70, depending on where you get it. But I say you should play it.
For the record, ladies and gentlemen, if you have the option to legally pick up a game or illegally download it, legally pick the game up. Show your support.
And do yourself a favor. Don't go to jail for downloading the game. It's not worth it.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, just get raped in the shower for that. Like, that's what you're in for. You download the game. better.
It's really not a way you want to go.
Stretch. All right. So.
Nonetheless, I guess this is my number three.
Mm-hmm.
This game, good fucking lord. When I mentioned Front Mission 3, I mentioned it as the evolution of tactics gaming. I stand by that. I felt that that was a really developed game. However, this is the game that influenced a lot of Final Fantasy shit to this day. Final Fantasy Tactics. This game, in my opinion, out of the entire PlayStation era of Final Fantasies, might actually have the best plot of them all. This had a plot that dealt with corruption within within politics, within the church. There was a lot of customization with your parties. It utilized a job system remnant of Final Fantasy 3 and 5. You know, the battles. If you liked exploiting stuff in 10, you could do it here. The characters were memorable, and you had some cheesy characters at that. Thunder God Cid, anyone. Again, another memorable soundtrack. I mean, it's... Tactics is one of those games. You know, Tactics had one of the most memorable quotes in video games I've ever heard. With Delita looking at Ramza after he kidnaps Princess Ovelia and says, if you want to stop... Look, you couldn't stop this. If you have to blame someone, look, blame yourself or God. And the fact is, when they remade the game for the PSP with a revised translation, which admittedly... Final Fantasy Tactics on the PlayStation 1 had a very, very bad translation job. It's like they whiffed it pretty good. So they revised the translation and give it more of a old English Shakespearean feel. But they changed that line to, "'Tis your faith or your sword that fail you, not I." And I thought that was like, no, don't.
That was the cheapest thing they could have did.
Oh, so that is the only thing that made me mad about that. But, I mean, otherwise, the game is so good. It's... That's a Final Fantasy experience, and that is one that is just well-developed, well-thought-out. You know, it hits home in a lot of ways. I mean, it...
And if you're, if you're into the side stuff like I am, there's a lot of stuff to grind in that game.
Oh, my God.
That game goes from being a 100-hour game from being like 50 to easily 100 hours by trying to get some of the side quest stuff like Cloud.
And I'll tell you what, you really want to talk about games that carried over? The Ivalice universe managed to weasel its way into other games. Vagrant Story, also on the PS1. Final Fantasy XII. Final Fantasy XII Remnant Wings. All in the Ivalice universe. You had the offshoots with Tactics Advance and Tactics Advance 2.
Oh, those are actually my favorites because, the rules for those battles. Oh my god.
Fuck the law system.
You can't use lightning in this battle. I'll use lightning, red card, you lose the battle.
It's like, get effed, get wrecked. All right, James, you're number two.
All right, before I get to number two, I'm going to throw out an honorable mention for the Saints Row series because, oh my god, they went from being a generic copy of a game series to being. Better than the series that they were making fun of and copying.
They just decided, if Grand Theft Auto decided to get super serious and take itself too seriously, I honestly have to say that Saints Row, especially 3 and onwards, just stopped completely. It was like, you know what, we're going to take this as far off the rails as we can.
It took Grand Theft Auto San Andreas and just, ran with all the goofy shit you could do. All of it. Beating people up with dildos, chasing people around while they're having sex. It's retarded. But that is my honorable mention because the next game that I'm going to say is Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. Just because, dear God, did you play this one? Or did you not play this one either?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry?
So did you actually play San Andreas or did you skip this one too?
I did not play San Andreas.
Man, what the fuck? Anyway, so it in turn, when did you stop playing the game? Was it just 3? And then you did play after 3.
Honestly, I did not play Vice City or San Andreas.
Wow, you missed if 3 was literally 3 is like the prologue. It's like, because it's literally considered like the Grand Theft Auto 3 series. Those two games just explain all the plot holes in Grand Theft Auto 3, which I think is kind of hilarious. And then, like, it's a really cool thing. Is like, if you noticed or heard, each of the Grand Theft Autos is based off of a movie series or a movie. This one is based off of Boys in the Hood and Menace of Society, with the main character being CJ. And then beyond that, there's a bunch of little, like, again, poking fun at actual characters, like your friend Ryder is obviously Eazy-E.
Yeah. And cruising down the street in my 6.4.
I mean, literally, then there's actually this mission called Boys in the Hood, which is like the funeral scene in Menace Society. It's like, there's a bunch of little funny Easter eggs in it. And it takes itself to a different level, because there's a lot of customization. You can make CJ really, really buff, or really, really fat, or really skinny. You can max out his car driving skills, and there's all kinds of other weird little events. Like, you can do like 5K runs or like triathlons and stuff. You can jump out of airplanes, go skydiving, on top of the usual heist thing. And there's a bunch of cool, like, voice actors. Like, Samuel Jackson's in it, which I thought was really cool. You have a bunch of the West Coast rappers, including Ice-T, more or less playing himself. It's really cool and really funny, because that's a lot of stuff that's in there that you wouldn't think to put in a game of that genre and go with it. And there's also this is the first time you can really maximize the property you can buy. You can completely customize cars. You have a relationship system, which is really weird. I don't know what they're thinking it through in there, but it's hilarious. It's like, each of your girlfriends give you a different, like, buff, more or less. Like, one, if you call her, she will heal you. She's a nurse. Another one is a lawyer. Or she's a paralegal, and she'll get you out of trouble if you get in trouble. It's all kinds of crazy stuff you can do with it. And hands down, out of the Grand Theft Auto 3s, it was hands down my favorite. Except for maybe 3, but I'll leave it at that for now. Because we're about to get into the number 1 for me. And this is really going to make a lot of people, if you listen to this, feel
kind of weird. Well, first I got to get to my number 2.
Oh yeah, you're slow at this. My bad. All right, so what's your number 2?
My number 2, in talking about Tactics had a lot of political intrigue. The downside with Tactics, it can be a long game if you choose to draw it out. And that's not a hard thing to do with Tactics. It is very, sometimes there are games that, they don't run themselves too far into the dirt. They go just far enough. And then they end before they wear out their welcome. This is a game that I think has political intrigue, but it's a bit lighter fare. And surprisingly, it's only about 30 hours. It was a PS1 really? RPG, and it was a sequel in a franchise that has had a continual storyline. This one is Seokuden 2.
Should have saw it coming.
Yep, the sequel to Seokuden 1 came out actually around the same time as Final Fantasy VIII. And unfortunately, since it had to compete with Final Fantasy VIII, you can guess which game outsold the other. The thing is, Seokuden 2 was history retrospect, has stuck with me a lot more. Like, 8, for the record, this is not a popular opinion. I actually like 8. I consider 8 to be a really good game. I don't want to say misunderstood, but I think it gets a lot of undeserved hate. I think it was Square at the time trying to do some really unique things.
Yeah.
And I mean, as far as beautiful RPGs on the PlayStation 1, I don't think there's many games that look better than Final Fantasy VIII. I don't think there are many games that sound better than Final Fantasy VIII. And you know what? Final Fantasy VIII has triple triad. Triple fucking triad.
That's something 9's better, but that's just me.
Oh, fuck. 8, 9. Fuck Tetramaster and fuck 9. However, getting back to the point, Seokuden 2, however, it has a similar political backdrop like Tactics, not as heavy. I think that's kind of a good thing. It's more kind of what I would call JRPG anime fare. But it's, you know, it's just a really clean, well-developed game. It plays very well. The story runs as long as it needs to without running too far, too much. You know, there's not a lot of useless filler there. You get the meat and bones out of your story, and you get what you want out of it. The Seokuden series is known for its recruitment thing, where you recruit 108 Stars of Destiny into your party. and you get your own castle. And this is a game where you actually, it was one of a very early on where one of the early games where you got to develop your own castle and add to it and build upon it. And that's not something that you would see in video games around that time.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool. Seokinen 2, I know I've been big on soundtracks. Seokinen 2 was good, but it was nothing to write home about. And coming from me, that's really gutting to say, but also on an additional note, Seokinen 2 was developed by Konami, which was famous for the Bomani series, which is an entire franchise dedicated to music.
Nothing but music.
Music. I mean, it invented the music game genre more or less on its own, or redefined it, certainly. So, I mean, the fact that Seokinen 2 has... It's okay. It's not...
I mean, think about the stuff that they're making around then. I don't think they really had the time, sadly, to devote their composers to that. Especially because it was like one of their big mainstream games at the time.
Oh, yeah. But here's what I will say about Seokinen 2. Seokinen 2 is also one of the rarest PS1 titles out there. Even though they just released it on the PSN network finally, after years of deliberation, I might add. Material sealed mint condition copies of this game can go for as high as $200-$400. It is a very rare game, and I think it's certainly worth playing. I think it definitely has a great story. It certainly, out of every game that I have listed, including that, my number one, Seokinen 2, in my opinion, has the best villain, at least the most evil villain in RPG history. We're talking on par with Kefka from Final Fantasy VI. Just a villain of nefarious evil that does evil just to be evil. This is one of those villains that is just awful. You can't wait to see him bite the dust, and you have to work to make him bite the dust.
Really?
Oh, Luca Blight. Luca Blight, in my opinion, also has one of the best quotes in video games. You know, when he asks for a sword and... to cut off somebody's head, and they're like, trying to find his ceremonial sword or whatever, and he's like, look, he says this phrase like, look, a sword doesn't need a fine lineage, it just needs to be sharp. That statement is meritocracy at its finest. Think about that from a deeper aspect. A sword does not need a fine lineage. It doesn't matter what name's attached to the sword, as long as it gets the job done, does it really matter?
Exactly.
But Blade himself is just fearsome. He's evil. He's psychotic. I mean, he's one of the most easily hateable villains I have ever seen in a video game to this day. There was none of this. He had a kind of a tragic backstory, but it was like all the shitty things that he does completely negates what pity you might have for him.
Yeah, that's how it should be, though. If you want somebody to be evil, you can't have this weird change of heart type thing.
Yeah. Now, before we get into our number ones, I feel like this is where we really should get into our honorable mentions games that, you know, did not make the list but could have.
Yeah. I have a few. I'm just going to name like two, though. I'll let you first.
Well, we've already talked about Alpha, or not Street Fighter Alpha 3, Street Fighter 3 and Capcom versus SNK 2. I certainly feel like, here's one, Twisted Metal, the Twisted Metal franchise, specifically Twisted Metal 2 in particular.
Yeah.
Even though I would say Black Sweet was definitely, I would say Black was the more definitive one of the series, but two I think is what two is. Twisted Metal 2 was actually the game that made me want to get a PlayStation. That really? Commercial.
Really, you know, a game made me want to get a PlayStation.
What's that?
Spyro the Dragon.
Let's see, other honorable mentions. The Bomani series with, in my opinion, Dance Dance Revolution. I think that was one of the most innovative, creative music games I've ever seen and played and dedicated my life to.
8 long years.
God.
Man.
Oh, man, I feel like the Neverwinter Nights franchise. I really feel like, especially Neverwinter Nights 2 in particular, that could have actually made the list. I feel like that was a great game that I regret not putting down.
Yeah.
Because it had some great NPCs, it had a great supporting cast, but, you know, you can't get every game you want on this list.
No, you really can't.
What about you, James?
Oh my god, honorable mentions. Sonic Adventure 1.
Oh, I would say Sonic Adventure 2, though. Just for
I'd
the
say for the
just for the level. You know which level it is.
Which one?
Everyone, Sonic Adventure 2, the level with the fucking snowboard going down the goddamn street.
Yeah, the first level.
Yeah.
Oddly enough.
What is it with Sonic the Hedgehog in the first level always being one of the most iconic?
I don't know. It's just like they have to start the game off right. You have to like go into Sonic knowing that this is the most badass game you're ever gonna play. Sadly, this might be the most badass part, but this is gonna be the baddest. Like, this would be the definitive Sonic for this generation. My only argument with Sonic Adventure 1 over Sonic Adventure 2 is like the adventure field in Sonic 1 or Sonic Adventure 1. Do you remember that shit?
Yeah.
Running around Station Square and going to find stuff. I just like that. Like, it felt kind of bad they took that away, but yeah, Sonic Adventure 2. The soundtrack was way... I don't even know the soundtrack is better. They're about on par. So let's say Sonic Adventure 1 and 2 for me are 1 in the honorable mention things. They're both really underrated. And they were just like the best 3D Sonics they've ever made and probably ever will make, sadly. They'll never get those glory days back.
Yeah.
And actually, that's it because my number one game is going to like literally make your head explode.
Oh,
I can't
God.
Believe you didn't think about it. I can't believe it's not on your list at all.
Do you want to... Well, do you want to start with yours then?
Sure.
Fire away, James.
It is the game that is one of the most infuriating games I've ever played, but it's one of my favorite games because it has to do with my favorite thing in the world. You know what it is, Jesse?
What's that?
Cars. You know what game it is?
Is it Gran Turismo?
Gran Turismo 3.
Oh, that should have been on at least, at the very minimum, that should have been on an honorable mention list.
Yeah, like, oh my god, for me, that's still, like, the one of the best games. To this day, I can play this game all the time. It still holds up, because the cars are actually perfect to their actual, like, the way they drive in real life, because you actually spend the time to go to all the racetracks, too, and sit down in the cars, record the sounds, get, like, the pitch and yaw of all the cars. Oh my god. For, like, there's nothing in terms of driving games that is nearly as good as that because it's a driving sim. It's not like just a racing. You could play, like, the quick races, as you know, but there's nothing like it. And if you're lucky enough to, like, find it somewhere, I would say get the disc. And it has a really good soundtrack. It's one of the first, I believe, besides, like, the Tony Hawk series, that has a full licensed soundtrack with a bunch of really good artists and a bunch of good songs.
99 red balloons floating in a summer sky. Panic bells, it's red alert. Something here. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, like, for it's one of the best. Like, I had to put something else on honorable mention because I had a really good soundtrack too. Need for Speed Underground. Back to this.
Oh.
Yeah, Need for Speed Underground.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know what? That is more of an arcade racer, but
it's an amazing arcade racer.
If you're
it's like, yeah, if you can find them in the GameCube, you can get it for like $4.99. On the GameCube or on the PS2 or the Xbox, but hands down, if you want to play a real racing game that literally is 100% accurate to every car in the game, from the suspension to the wheels to the way it sounds, you cannot beat Gran Turismo 3. Like, a lot of cars aren't on there, obviously, as it came out in 2002, but dear God, all like 300 cars that are on there are literally perfect to the detail. Even the minor details. The only annoyances in that game is a licensing system. Especially if you want to get an IA license. Good
oh,
luck.
Yeah.
Good God.
Yeah.
That's going to go on that story. Mm-hmm. They were tell stories about nerd rages. Almost broke a window with that. Good God. But that is my number one game on this list anyway. For all time. Especially just because it just completely redefined the genre. Because after that, there was race car games everywhere. They even made their own spinoff with MotoGP, which is pretty good too if you're into motorcycles, especially crotch rockets.
Oh. Oh my god. All right. My number one, and you actually mentioned it when you were talking about 10.
Really?
Yep. Final Fantasy IV. Final Fantasy IV is my number one game, and it may act. It may not be the best RPG ever conceived. I mean, there are certainly games that probably had better stories, that were certainly more epic, you know, better, well-developed, all of that. But if we're going to talk sentimental value, no game got me into RPGs quite like Final Fantasy IV. IV sucked me in. IV 4 introduced actual characters, not templates that you just put personalities over, but honest to God characters that you watched interact with each other. You watched their stories build. You watched them develop. You watched them experience joy, failure, sadness, joy. Ah, I'm repeating words.
That's, you know, how good it was just saying it over and over.
The boss battle theme for 4 is the quite possibly one of the most iconic boss battle themes in RPG history. You know, it was one of the best tellings of the Crystal Saga within the Final Fantasy lore. You know, you want to talk about Final Fantasies that have gotten direct sequels. You know how many there are? There are 3. Final Fantasy X, Final Fantasy XIII, and Final Fantasy IV.
What's sequel 4? Crystal Chronicles?
No. The After Years, which came out on PSP and, I want to say, the Wii, if I'm not mistaken.
I didn't know that. I'm going to have to play those then now.
Consider this. Show me a Final Fantasy that's been remade more than 4. You want to talk about a game that definitively fits the high fantasy nature of Final Fantasy that people swoon over? I dare you find one greater than 4. It cannot be done.
I don't think it
4 has been 4 has literally been they have pimped 4 out more than any game. Look, people complain we just want a remake of 7. How many times has 4 literally been put out there?
I want to say 4 times actually.
Let's see. You have the original SNES release. You have the PlayStation release when it came in Chronicles with a Chrono Trigger. You have
the DS version, because I have it.
No, you have the GBA version. Well, wait, was there a GBA version or was there just a straight DS version? I know there's a PSP version of it. I know there was a WonderSwan version of it. I know there was the 3D DS version that came out.
I mean, there's.
I'm pretty sure they've released it on iOS at this point.
They did.
How many different? There is no other Final Fantasy game that has been re-released more than that game.
Because it's that good. I mean, there's no other reason to even like make it that many times. And the best part is that if you have one of the newer ones, that's a full like CGI cutscenes and everything, and it makes Kane look even cooler.
Oh my lord! No, I cannot gush enough over 4. You know, 4 was I can't. I'm sorry. Tell you what, you know how good 4 was? 4 made me actually want to learn about RPGs. 4 made me want to play the RPG genre. That's how good 4 was. You know, I know a lot of the Nintendo era fans are going to clamor that 6 was the best one. And 6 might have had a better story. It might have had well-developed characters. The graphics were certainly better in 6. But I feel like 4 set the tone the best. 4 was just...
Did you start playing the game? Did I hear that in the
background? Actually, funny enough, in the background, I have Final Fantasy XIV running, which is also good. And the Gold Saucer patch is phenomenal. I like replaying Triple Triad again. Triple Triad is still a dirty, dirty whore, but that's neither here nor there. Nonetheless, that is my number one game, Final Fantasy IV.
Man, that game, though, it's insane.
It is. And with that, I believe this brings to an end the very first Jesse and James Team Rocket podcast.
And now we just got to record another one and do a little... Yeah. We got to figure out what to do for the next one. What would you want to do for the next one?
You know what? We'll figure that out and we'll see where it goes. But until then, I'm Jesse.
I'm James. And you can catch me on Twitter at YoungJameis if you want to do the whole Twitter thing or not.
Yep. You can find me at Jesse Uno. And with that, this is Team Rocket blasting off again.